This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Are you ready to win big and live it up in Sin City? It's the slam dunk in Vegas on the Team 980. Listen for your chance to win a flyaway trip to Las Vegas with three friends and $20,000 in spending money for the first two rounds of the college basketball tournament. No better place to be than Vegas for that first weekend of the NCAA tournament. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in, and listen to the Team 980 for a chance to win the experience of a lifetime. Listen each day for an hour to earn your daily entry. This is a national contest. More details available at odyssey.com/slam dunk. Tony Skin, George Mason's head coach at 11:35. Robbie Hummel will join us next hour. We'll talk about the Terps with Robbie Hummel. Joining us right now from CBS Sports, somebody we love having on the show, is Jordan DeJohnny, at Jordan DeJohnny on X on Twitter. Actually, I was just looking during the break at your some of the things that you've tweeted recently, and we opened up the show today talking about how good Maryland is, and it sounds like you're a big college hoops fan, and you were watching the Terps last night, too.
What's going on, Kevin? Thanks so much for having me on the show. Yeah, this February portion of the sports calendar is probably my favorite because I can shelve NFL for a second and put all my attention on college basketball, and I'm having so much fun watching all these games, trying to catch up on these teams so I can get my bets ready for when I go to Vegas for the conference championship tourneys. But man, Maryland, I feel like, is one of the more fun teams in the country, and I actually have fans from, or friends, I should say, from Florida and Utah, different people around my friend groups texting me saying, I love this Maryland team. So I got to sit down and really watch that Nebraska game. It was fantastic, man. Derrick Queen is one of the smoothest operators I've ever seen. Selton Miguel is a great shooter as well. I'm a Tennessee basketball fan, so these two teams play completely different styles of basketball.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm a Maryland guy, and this is their best team in a few years, and Derrick Queen's probably their best freshman since Joe Smith. I mean, he's a top 10 pick, it looks like, right now in June. But they have so many ways, Jordan, to beat you. They've got three guys who can shoot it and beat you off the dribble. Then they've got two bigs. Their starting five is the highest producing scoring starting five in the country, but I'm like you. After, you know, during football season, I'm not paying attention to much of it except for Maryland, and I'm wondering, you know, Tennessee, Florida, Bama, Auburn, some of these bigger, stronger, more athletic SEC teams. I know Houston's got some of that too. You know, I think Maryland's starting five can match up against anybody's. Like, I think they could make a deep tournament run. Tennessee, though, and some of these SEC teams are just loaded athletically.
Yeah. And listen, I don't think I can remember seeing a conference this loaded from top to bottom than the SEC
Never.
This year. And part of it makes me wonder, does that open the door for another team like a Maryland, or maybe it really opens the door for a team like Duke who can go all the way and win a championship because they're so talented? I really do wonder if the SEC is just going to beat itself up, but any of those teams can win on any given night. I think they play really great defense, especially speaking specifically about the Tennessee Volunteers. That's going to be their calling card when it comes to a potential run. But what I love about Maryland is, you brought it up, they're starting five. They all average double digits, I'm sure. And then last night, we didn't see one single bench point, which is pretty crazy. Right. So I wonder about the Terrapins when it comes to, what if they get in foul trouble? What if there's an injury? What if they have to go to their bench? Are they capable of doing that? That's probably going to be the X factor for a potential run.
Yeah, their best scoring reserve has been out the last couple of games, so he wasn't in the game last night, but he'll be back. But yeah, Denton and I talked about it earlier this week. I don't know if it is unprecedented or not. It seems to me that it might be, but I didn't read anything about it. The coaches poll 1 through 4 this week, Bama, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee. Even in the heyday of the ACC and the Big East, and that's what, you know, we were, you know, all around here, we grew up with the ACC and the Big East being the two best basketball leagues in the country. I can't remember a top four all from the same league in a ranking.
Yeah, that's absolutely hysterical. And I mean, all those teams are really worthy of those positions, but that's a big reason why I can't wait for this conference tournament in the SEC, but that's another reason why I think that they could just beat each other up. So we'll see how the seeding works for the big tournament, but I do wonder how many of these elite SEC squads have the wherewithal to go all the way through March and end up hoisting a trophy when it's all said and done.
So you like Vegas for conference championship weekend more than the first weekend of the NCAA tournament?
I go there almost every single year, that exact same week, yes. And I think it's a little cheaper, right? Because everyone's going to Vegas for the NCAA tournament.
Of course.
But if you get to go the week before, it's probably a little bit easier on your wallet. So we got a boys' bachelor trip this year, so that's going to be really fun.
So where are you heading? Where are you staying?
I think we're staying at the Flamingo.
Oh, wow. Old school. Old school. That was always a spot many years ago that was a lot of fun. And of course, you know, right across the street from now the no longer Mirage, which they have closed down, and Caesar's Palace on the Strip. We're talking to Jordan DeJani. Yeah, that's a good weekend, and you're right. The first weekend of the NCAA tournament, I've done that maybe 5 or 6 times. It is an absolute zoo. Like, by the way, Super Bowl weekend is, or, you know, a big fight weekend, but you probably are smarter. Plus, you have more games, you know, over a longer period of time. All right, let's talk some football. That's why we had Jordan on the show. That's why we always have Jordan on the show. So let's just start with Sunday. You know, this past Sunday, how shocking to you was the dominance of Philadelphia's defense over Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid?
Shocking. Completely shocking. 10 out of 10 shocking. Listen, I was pretty convinced that the Eagles were going to win this game. And I even wrote 1,000 words on CBSSports.com looking at the reasons why. But I, just like everybody, I expected this to be a close game. I knew that the Eagles' defense was going to play a huge role in the outcome of this event, but at the same time, I didn't expect them to completely dominate Patrick Mahomes from start to finish. When was the last time we saw Patrick Mahomes as rattled, as like a first-year quarterback? I can't remember him looking shaky in the pocket like he was this past Sunday. He had his first 5 drives. The Chiefs scored 0 points. They moved the chains just once. They had 14 total yards on 16 plays, the fewest total yards through 5 drives that Mahomes had ever gained in his 133 career starts. As for the Eagles, they played motivated on both sides of the football. And that's what I keep asking myself about throughout the past week or so is, you know, were the Eagles just more motivated to play in this game? Did the Chiefs just get used to making this an annual tradition of getting to the Super Bowl? Because they didn't look super motivated on Sunday.
You know, every time I have you on, you put things in the way that I love. Like, you went through the first five drives. I actually put it similarly, but just with the first nine. They never crossed midfield on the first nine drives of the game, and they had a total of 45 yards on their first nine possessions. That's insanity. And it was only when it was 34-0 and the game had been decided that they honestly probably put up the most prolific garbage yard stat stuffing quarter in the history of football. And people that will look back on this game, not having the context of maybe remembering it, will look at Mahomes' numbers and look at the Chiefs' numbers and look at their points and say, Philadelphia beat them pretty good. But they won't understand unless you watched it. It was the most dominating, for me, defensive three quarters I think I've ever seen in a Super Bowl. I mean, Seattle, what they did to Denver and that prolific Peyton Manning team was impressive. But what you said about Pat Mahomes, it's like, we've never seen that is the answer, because he actually didn't play that poorly against Tampa when they got run.
Right. Yeah, Mahomes actually didn't play that bad at all in that Super Bowl. And previously, I was actually in attendance for Mahomes' worst ever NFL game. It occurred in Nashville against the Titans a few years ago. I don't think the Chiefs scored a touchdown the entire game. They were absolutely dominated. But this past Sunday was something completely different. And I think it leads to some fascinating questions we can ask ourselves, right? Like, was this just a clunker? Was this just a game we can pass on and ignore? And, they just weren't ready to play for whatever reason. Maybe more things come out about this. But at the same time, when we're talking about Patrick Mahomes, we're talking about one of the quarterbacks that is already viewed as one of the best in NFL history, right? Someone would have him somewhere in there in the top 10 and is on the track to maybe potentially surpass Tom Brady, the GOAT. But you can't have a performance like that on that big of a stage, because it's going to drastically affect the narrative around you. So that's why I think it's so notable, and I think it's really opened itself up to a lot of interesting conversations that are being held by sports radio hosts such as yourself this week.
What's Brady's, like, the two losses to the Giants, interior pressure always bothered Brady, and they had it certainly in that first Super Bowl with Justin Tuck, etc., and the pressure they got on him. He never had a game, though, like Sunday, I don't think. Unless you want to go to that playoff loss that they had in Denver, not the championship game, the divisional round game when they got blown out. Does anything strike you as a big game in which Brady was just completely insignificant? I don't want to say Mahomes was hurtful, because it was about what happened up front that really disrupted the game. But did Brady have anything comparable to Sunday?
Nothing comes to mind off the top of my head, to be honest with you. Nothing like that. Like, Brady was always a stabilizing force, win or loss. And you bring up those Super Bowls against the Giants, the pressure on Brady was certainly one thing. But also the Giants made some magical plays, right, to end up hoisting the Lombardi when it was said and done. But when it comes to Mahomes, it's interesting. When we talk about legacies and resumes, you can't have two of your four largest losses in your career happening in the Super Bowl, right? 22 points versus the Buccaneers, 18 versus the Philadelphia Eagles now. That's going to be something that sticks with Patrick Mahomes. And he was not that stabilizing force that Tom Brady has been, win or loss, with the Patriots during that dynasty. He was making mistakes I'm not used to Patrick Mahomes making. He wasn't moving around in the pocket like he usually does to avoid getting his left tackle pushed into his lap and end up throwing an interception in the shadow of his own goalpost. So very uncharacteristic from Patrick Mahomes.
Talking to Jordan DeJani, let's shift it to Philadelphia and then put it in context of the NFC East and really the NFC overall. So Washington has the year that they had, and you were on our show a couple of times during the season, and it was a magical ride, and Jaden Daniels was incredible, and they've got all this cap space. They've got room to fix, what was their major flaws, which was defense, number one. What's the gap between Philadelphia and the rest of the NFC, and where does Washington, land on the list of threats to Philadelphia?
Yeah, let's put everything into perspective here, okay? Congratulations to the Eagles. They won the Super Bowl. But I wasn't very high on this team until after the NFC Championship game, to be honest. I mean, we don't have to dive into the X's and O's of that, but that was the real turning point for me where I said, okay, I think the Eagles are now going to win the Super Bowl because the passing game got back on track, the defense showed out, you're able to shut down the magician that was Jaden Daniels. But, I mean, there were points throughout the regular season. Once every couple of home games, Jalen Hurts was getting booed at home by his own fans because the passing game was just so erratic. And again, he's working with two arguably top 10 wide receivers in the NFL. The Eagles had the number one defense in the league. There's no doubt about that. But they have some pretty important pending free agents that I'm really fascinated to see if they're going to go chase a bag and go to other teams or if they're going to take a pay cut to remain with the Eagles and try to chase another Super Bowl. So, yeah, I think the Eagles are the premier team in the NFC. There's no doubt about that. But I think that the Washington Commanders are a team that is up there in the running to overtake them, if you will. I think that the Detroit Lions are an interesting team, not only because they went 15-2 and were so dominant last year, but we're going to find out the real makeup of this team now that they've lost Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. Are they going to be as successful as they were in years past? The NFC North as a whole is really intriguing. You have to wonder which one of those teams is going to come out and emerge as a legitimate contender, whether that's the Minnesota Vikings or Green Bay Packers. So I think the Eagles are the number one team in the NFC, yes, but I don't think that the gap between Washington is drastic, if you will.
So your reasoning for that is just Jalen Hurts and the pass game, which, by the way, even going into the postseason, I'm like, you know, there's just something that just doesn't look right. But then you consider that Jalen Hurts, in every big game of his career, looks like a completely different player than the inconsistent player that we saw this year and even in 2023. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Hurts is a gamer. I know I'm talking a little down on him, but he's still a really good NFL quarterback that 85% of NFL teams would want as their leader. But it's more than just Jalen Hurts being a little inconsistent. It's also that Philadelphia is going to have a different offensive play caller for
right.
The fifth time in as many years or so. So what exactly is this the identity of this Eagles offense going to be moving forward? We know it's going to remain with Saquon Barkley, but there's no doubt that this system is going to look different from 2024 over to 2025. So the Eagles, over the past few years in the NFL, have always been one of the more premier teams, the most talented teams. They did have that incredible drop-off where their defense fell off a cliff in 2023, but they've made the playoffs virtually every year with Nick Sirianni. So, yeah, I mean, the Eagles are what we think they are, but at the same time, did they catch lightning in a bottle a bit with the first year of Saquon Barkley, with Jalen Hurts playing some good ball down the stretch, with the number one defense in total yards and scoring?
Who are they going to hire as the offensive coordinator to replace Kellen Moore?
There is a favorite. I think they're going to end up promoting from within. His name escapes me right now, but I think they're actually going to promote from within.
Okay. Is that the guy Brady?
I'm not 100% sure, so I don't want to misspeak.
Okay. All right, we're talking to Jordan DeJani. What do you in priority list for Washington in the offseason? Give it to me.
In no particular order, I would say you definitely need a wide receiving threat opposite of Terry McLaurin. That's going to be very important to me. And I don't know if you've looked at some of the pending free agents, but I would argue that the wide receiving class is not incredibly deep. So maybe that's an area that's going to be looked at in the NFL draft. Cornerback is absolutely one. I think Marshon Lattimore is probably still going to be on roster. But you need to add to that room as well. Tight end, what decisions are going to be made there for Washington? The offensive line, there's decisions to be made as well. And here's a sneaky need. I don't even know if it's sneaky. I don't know if you guys have talked about it. But what about defensive end? What about pass rusher? I think that's something that the Commanders absolutely need to upgrade with. Maybe that comes in the form of Myles Garrett. Maybe it comes in the form of another free agent or the NFL draft. But I think that Washington absolutely needs to address the edge position.
Yeah, it's not sneaky. It's probably number one for a lot of us. They've got to stop the run next year. They were a terrible run-stopping team, so they need an edge-setting run stopper who can also get after the passer, which leads us to the aforementioned Myles Garrett. Where does he land, if anywhere other than Cleveland?
Yes, you know, I kind of believe the Browns when they say, we are not trading the best defensive player in the NFL, but you can make the argument they should, right? Acquire some draft capital for a top-tier player. Myles Garrett clearly doesn't make the Browns Super Bowl contenders by himself. And then on the flip side, the Browns clearly aren't one player away from contending either. So, you know, when this news broke, I initially said, no way. The Browns are not trading Myles Garrett. He can complain all he wants, but I think Cleveland's going to keep this star player and end up, you know, through a pitch, they're going to be able to convince him that Cleveland has a plan for the future. But as time went on, I'm saying, you know what, I think that the Browns could probably make the smart decision and go ahead and give him to another contender, maybe out of conference. So a lot of people have talked about Washington, and I already talked about how defensive end is a legitimate need there. But, man, Myles Garrett on the defensive line would be incredibly fun. And here's the other part of it, too. I think that Adam Peters has already shown that he will be aggressive in acquiring talent that's made available, such as he did with Marshawn Lattimore at the trade deadline. Now, do we wish that acquisition paid some more immediate dividends? Absolutely. But I commend the mindset and the desire to attack your quote-unquote Super Bowl window when it's open. Another team that I'm thinking about as a potential landing spot for Myles Garrett would have to be the Detroit Lions. I mean, can you imagine having to block Aiden Hutchinson and Myles Garrett off the edge? That would be incredible. So after what the Philadelphia Eagles have done over the past few years, which ended up in a Super Bowl, where they were aggressive in acquiring talent, not only through free agency, not only through the draft, but also via trade, maybe that's a page out of the Eagles playbook that the Lions could take and add someone like Myles Garrett who could soften the blow as they undergo this change in terms of defensive leadership with Aaron Glenn now in New York.
Yeah, and I think you said it. I think Washington and Adam Peters have a window here, too, to think big and to act big, and Marshawn Lattimore was the first indication. Look, people have been talking about potentially Philadelphia. They can let Josh Sweat go. Can you imagine him and Jalen Carter together? Nobody here wants to see that. So let's talk quarterbacks real quickly. My first question to you is about our quarterback. Where does he rank among NFC quarterbacks for you?
Oh, NFC? I mean, if I'm looking at just the NFL in general, I think my elite tier would all be AFC guys like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow. And then in the next tier, off the top of my head, would be Jalen Hurts, Matthew Stafford, I still really like, even though he's an older player. Jared Goff is going to be up there. Jaden Daniels would be in that same tier, too. So, you know, this is a player who just wrapped up his first season, and the ceiling that he showed, you know, we're talking about one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL potentially. The unknown makes him more appealing to me. We've watched Jalen Hurts and Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff and Brock Purdy for years now. When you have the kind of magical season that Jaden Daniels had in 2024, that makes me want to almost select him over some of those next tier guys that I mentioned. So, I mean, if you ask me straight up, is Jaden Daniels the best quarterback in the NFC? I don't know if I could say that. But he's definitely up there, top two, top three, in my opinion.
What's going to happen to Matt Stafford?
This is a great question, and this is a super, super fascinating storyline, in my opinion, because according to reports from ESPN, the Rams are going to redo Stafford's contract, and he's going to remain in the fold, and Stafford wants to do that. He has confidence in Sean McVay, confidence in the Rams front office. He's excited by all of this young talent on the opposite side of the ball with Jared Verse and Braden Fisk and all those guys. But if you remember, last offseason, they were basically facing the exact same situation. And I don't want to say contract talks got contentious, but they weren't exactly going swimmingly. And if that's something that happens again, could they come to the point where Matthew Stafford is up to be traded to another team? And if that ends up coming to fruition, I think there'd be a lot of interest around the league for him. But a couple of things that are why I don't believe that's ultimately going to happen. For one, Sean McVay flirted with retirement a lot, right? He's not someone who's going to willingly enter quarterback purgatory, especially when he has a talented roster. But number two, I do truly believe that Matthew Stafford wants to remain on this team. It might be his final season in the NFL. Ultimately, I think he remains with the Rams.
Okay. By the way, if he didn't, where would he play? Would he play in New York for the Giants?
Yeah, especially since they just hired his brother-in-law. They just hired his brother-in-law, his wife's brother, as an offensive assistant. I think it was assistant quarterbacks coach. The New York Giants would be a potential fit. I would also keep an eye on the Pittsburgh Steelers as well.
All right, does Aaron Rodgers play next year? And if so, for whom?
I love this storyline because, of course, naturally the Jets parted ways with Aaron Rodgers. He's now free to, you know, look around and see where he could potentially land. But here's my thing with Aaron Rodgers. I have legitimate questions about what kind of level of interest there is in him in the open market. And that's something I've been saying for quite some time. When we're looking at potential landing spots, we're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't know if you saw Deshaun Elliott's post on Instagram, but so I don't know if he's exactly the favorite to land in Pittsburgh. I don't know if the fan base would like that either. What about the Las Vegas Raiders? I mean, they kind of surprised the NFL world by hiring Pete Carroll. Instead of chasing Super Bowls and trying to catch lightning in a bottle, what they're trying to do is stabilize the organization. So maybe the Raiders are a favorite not to trade up the draft board for Shedeur Sanders, but sign Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers. The Raiders, you probably have to throw in the mix there too. The Tennessee Titans, they have the number one overall pick in the draft, but I think they could be a potential landing spot for Aaron Rodgers as well. Listen, I don't know if the Titans are exactly in love with taking someone like Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders at number one overall, so they could go the veteran route for Aaron Rodgers for a year or two. But again, I don't know how enticing that option is. So I think that Aaron Rodgers does play and wants to play another year of football. But I have legitimate questions about how many teams are going to be interested in his services.
Putting aside the issues related to, you know, leadership and, you know, arrogance and narcissism and anything else you want to use to describe Aaron Rodgers, do you think he's capable of playing at a, you know, top half of the league starter level?
If you give me top half of the league, top 16 starter, I want to lean just a little bit yes, but I'm not very confident in that answer. I mean, I think that Aaron Rodgers at times last year just looked straight up elderly. Okay, it was so bad that Garrett Wilson was basically asking for a trade out of New York. Again, he's not one of my top options if I'm out there looking for a quarterback to lead my team in 2025. So I think that he could be on the very fringe of top 16 play. But, I mean, this is a 41-year-old quarterback that we're talking about, and he hasn't looked very good over the past few years.
What about Sam Darnold? What about Russell Wilson?
So Russell Wilson is another quarterback that I don't know if there's going to be a high level of interest in him. We've seen reports saying that the Raiders could be potentially interested in a reunion with Pete Carroll. I know that they ended on bad terms, but all reports indicate that the two have kind of made up and are friends again. So I think that Russell Wilson could be a favorite to land in Vegas. With Sam Darnold, this is where it gets really, really interesting because we all understand that he cost himself millions of dollars with how he finished the season, how he was ousted from the postseason as well. Has that changed the Vikings' mindset on him and how much money they're willing to pay him? Has that changed Sam Darnold's mindset when it comes to potentially chasing the bag with another interested team? What if he finds another club that's semi-stable, like maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers? What if they come up with the money to outbid the Vikings for Sam Darnold? Is that something that he would take them up on? So I don't view Sam Darnold as an absolute lock to return to Minnesota. It wouldn't shock me in the slightest, but I don't think he's an absolute lock. But here's also what's interesting. What if the Vikings move on from Sam Darnold? Would they automatically give the keys to the car to J.J. McCarthy? Could they potentially add another veteran like a Matthew Stafford or an Aaron Rodgers if they wanted to go that route and play more of the Jordan Love hand with J.J. McCarthy as he continues to develop? So there's a lot of musical chairs moving around here on the quarterback market, at least the way I see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading something yesterday where Kevin O'Connell would welcome Kirk Cousins back with open arms. Do you think that's even a possibility?
Yeah, I love that. I haven't even considered that, but that actually makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I'll go back to it. I feel like the Vikings are not exactly a lock to just give the keys to J.J. McCarthy. I think they'd like to have him sit another year and be fully invested as the QB2. If Kirk Cousins, which we all assume he's going to be looking for a change of scenery, Kevin O'Connell would make a lot of sense.
Jordan, you're the best. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the time. Let's talk soon.
You guys are the best. Really, thank you. Appreciate you guys having me on the show.
At Jordan Dejani on X on Twitter. That's Dejani. Tony Skin, the head coach of the George Mason Patriots. They are the first place George Mason Patriots in the Atlantic 10. He'll join us next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
We've talked a lot about the season that Maryland's having as they are on a roll right now in the Big Ten, but nobody's hotter in terms of local teams than George Mason. They have won 10 in a row. They are 20-5 overall. They're 11-1 in first place in the Atlantic 10, and they are home tomorrow against St. Joe's at Patriot Center, 12:30. Tip, first 2,000 fans, by the way, get a free T-shirt. Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest listener lines, is the head coach of George Mason, Tony Skin, who is now 40-17 over his first two seasons, his second season not even complete, 20-10 in the A-10. You've got a team that is on fire. You've won a lot of close games during this 10-game winning streak. But let's just start off, Coach, by giving us why your team is on the roll it's on. Tell us about the 2025 version of George Mason.
Yeah, no, it's been obviously a fun ride, and you know, we've been unlocking some things defensively that really hasn't happened here at George Mason in a long time. But you know, I say it all the time. I think this is a special group. I think coaches get too much credit sometimes, and the reality of it is, you know, I've got five seniors that really, really care about, you know, their last run. You know, they're super, super connected, and it just really makes my job easy when you have an opportunity to, you know, keep a Darius Maddox, to keep a Jarrett Billups, to keep a Woody Newton, and Jalen Haynes, who's probably just as good as anybody else at his position in the league. He sat out last year, and so he understood everything about what we were trying to do. And so when you add, you know, Katie Johnson, who's had just as much of an illustrious career at Auburn as anyone else, and add Zach Anderson, you know, who was a 16-point scorer, it makes you a force in something that you have to deal with. And so I'd say our older group that's just staying super, super connected to each other, you know, it's been a big, big reason why we've had some early season success. And obviously with six games left in conference play, every game matters, and those guys understand that.
You mentioned your defense. You're the only team in the nation right now to rank in the top 10 in overall field goal defense, effective field goal defense, two-point defense, three-point shooting defense, and scoring defense. You know, as a coach, and by the way, a former player and a hell of a one as a college player for the Final Four team that Jim Larrañaga had in 2006, how much harder is it to get a group to buy in to defending night in and night out versus when you've got a really good offensive team?
Yeah, I think sometimes it takes a little turbulence, you know, because everyone wants to be successful in the game of basketball. Everyone wants to win a national championship. Most don't require what it takes. We got punched in the mouth very, very early in the season. You know, 2 1-point losses to Central Michigan and East Carolina, a game that really we had, you know, I'd say probably 40 at-bats to win, and we couldn't hit. We went 0-for-40 at-bat.
Yeah.
When you get punched in the mouth like that, you know, you go 2-3 to start your season with a much more talented roster in year two than we had last year. We were pretty good defensively last year, you know, top 15 nationally, number one in our league. We recruited to just the style we have defensively this year, and so I was excited about that group, but we had to get punched in the mouth, and we responded. You know, we went to James Madison kind of with our backs against the wall, and when you can pick up a nice road win like that, you know, guys, they kind of start to believe. And if you look at our schedule, you know, with the exception of our Duke game, you know, we've been in every game. You know, it was a one-possession game with 3 minutes to go at Marquette. Even at Duke, you know, the halftime score was 25-16. We couldn't score, but Duke couldn't score either.
Right.
And so it's really just a genetic makeup of our team, our competitiveness, you know, guys holding each other accountable. You know, I give these guys a lot of freedom and a lot of autonomy offensively, but if you can't guard, you can't play at George Mason.
There's no doubt, and that's, I think a lot of people appreciate that who really know basketball, to get teams to defend like your team does night in and night out. You know, when there are nights where you're struggling to put the ball in the basket, which is more fun typically for players, is a real testament to you. You're modest, because in talking about your players, that's great, but you guys are 5-0 in your last five games decided by 5 points or less, 3-0 in your last three games that have gone to overtime, including the game on Tuesday night at St. Louis. What do you attribute sort of the ability to close out these games? You talked about the early one, or, you know, earlier in the season, the double overtime loss to East Carolina, where you had 40, you know, attempts, probably an exaggeration, but to win it. But why have you become better at winning these very close games?
Listen, it's a combination of so many different things. You know, obviously the basketball guys have been on our sides a few times.
Yeah.
You look at our league, you look at the A-10, man, and everyone is literally just chipping away each game is one possession. There's a big cluster in our league right now where from, you know, four all the way down to about 13, it's like a 1.5 game separation in the standings. But that's the same way it is in the games. It's one possession this way, another possession that way, a missed free throw. And, you know, I would accredit our leadership from a senior standpoint. These guys are experienced. They've been down the road of certain times in the games. And just our GW game alone, I remember just kind of obviously coming out of that game victorious, but watching the film, and I'm seeing certain things like, man, GW's actually really good. And I think the difference maker in coming out of that game with the win was we just had older guys on the floor, and they had a bunch of babies on the floor. It's definitely been a major, major piece. And again, our anchor defensively, Jared Phillips, he's as good as anyone in the country when it comes to what he does for us and how he anchors our defense. And, you know, it's become contagious and everyone else is buying into it. And anyway, anytime that you can defend, you're going to be in a lot of ball games. Now, when you start making some shots like we did against Rhode Island at home, then you have the comfortability of having a little bit of a lead as you continue to guard.
Talking to Tony Skin, the head coach of George Mason, they've won 10 in a row. They lead the A-10. They're a game ahead of VCU, who they play a week from Saturday, but we're not going to get ahead of ourselves yet because they play tomorrow at home against St. Joe's, 12:30 tip. What is the A-10 this year? Last year, two bids. What does it look like? I'm sure this is one of those things between KenPom numbers and net numbers. You know, you're looking at this to see where you are bubble-wise. You know, are you going to have to win the tournament? Tell me about the A-10 makeup this year.
Well, I'll say, you know, I'll speak on George Mason and George Mason alone. It's a tough league. It's a bear of a league. I think it's a multiple, you know, bid league. You know, I look at the metrics, whether it's KenPom, whether it's the net. And the one thing I try to challenge my guys, and they've kind of taken this approach as well, is we've got to be able to control our own destiny. You know, we've obviously got one quad one win at VCU, but if you look at our road wins, we've won in places that, for the most part, most don't win. You know, St. Bonaventure, you know,
Dayton.
Obviously, we went to Dayton, and we went to Dayton. We just came back from St. Louis. And believe it or not, GW is turning into a tough place to play. And so when you can put that on your resume, hopefully and obviously we have business to take care of. Every game is becoming the Super Bowl when you're in first place. But I think we've put ourselves in position to have at least have the conversation. I don't know what it's looked like historically. I know historically the A-10 has been, you know, in a good year, you're getting three teams in. I think it's really, it just comes down to how we play, how VCU plays, and how Dayton finishes. You know, last year, your four teams that got a double bye, they all lost in the first round. And the two teams that went to the NCAA tournament, really at the beginning of the season, I don't think anyone would have counted them in the tournament. And so you never know. It's as competitive of a league in the country. I think it's a gift and a curse because we compete and beat each other up. And then when it's all said and done, you know, everyone's, you know, 8-10 or 9-9. And it's just really, really hard to see the body of work of our league. But, you know, hopefully we're turning towards, you know, getting multiple teams in the NCAA tournament.
So your career, you know, obviously we all remember the 2006 team and the run it had here at home, too, at Capital One. It was the MCI Center back then. And you've been in coaching for a while now. Who have you heard from? I mean, you were with Kevin Willard there, you know, at Maryland for his first year. Who have you been hearing from as you guys have been on this roll?
Oh, man, I hear from everyone in the business, man. I'm pretty connected around the country. I've obviously been very, very fortunate to work with some tremendous people. I've obviously played for Coach Jim Larranaga and his staff down there in Miami, but, I mean, pretty much everybody that you can think of in the country has reached out just, you know, saying congratulations, and I appreciate it. There's still a lot of season left, though, because, as you know, winning is so hard. You know, but losing is always right around the corner and just trying to stay locked in. But, you know, again, I'm following Kevin Willard and what he's doing. And obviously in year three, I was with him in year one, you know, spent 3 years with him over at Seton Hall. You know, he's a major, major piece of, you know, who I am today as a coach. He gave me so much autonomy to really help him at Seton Hall. And obviously in year one at Maryland, and even though I'm not over there with those guys, I recruited a bunch of those guys. And so I'm always, you know, pulling for those guys, especially locally.
Yeah. Look, this is a great story, but like you said, it's one at a time, and we're rooting for it. Mason tomorrow against St. Joe's at home, and then a week from tomorrow, there is a big one down in Richmond against VCU. That may determine the regular season league champ in the A-10, but what a season Mason's having. What a role Tony Skin's team is on. Thanks for making time for me. Really appreciate it. Wish you the best of luck.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Tony Skin, everybody. Mason, right now, 20-5, 11-1 in the A-10. I mean, you look at the numbers, you look at the net number right now is 65th. They're 66th in KenPom. They're, like you and I talked about this yesterday, Denton, if they rolled through the if they won the regular season, and let's just say they ran the table, and that's not going to be easy because that VCU game will be a tough game. But that might put them in the field as an at-large if they were to run the table and end up 17-1 in league play with, by the way, at that point, 26 wins. Don't you think it could?
No, with the SEC being as dominant, I don't know.
You think they got to win the tournament?
I think they have to win the tournament. I mean, if you're going to have potentially two massive conferences with double-digit bids, you got to win the tournament. It's a smaller conference.
They've already beaten Dayton. All right, if they beat VCU head-to-head, if they've got a win over Dayton and VCU and they win that league, and Dayton and VCU's numbers are much better. They're in the 30s in both KenPom and net. But if Mason were to run the table and they're sitting there as A-10 champs with one loss, 17-1, 26-5, having beaten VCU on the road and Dayton on the road, I think they're much closer to being on that bubble than you think.
I think they're close, but I think the committee would take the bigger team over the smaller team. That's my fear, is that when I look at, like I told you this the other day, I think having, you know, 13 teams out of one conference is not great for the overall health of college basketball because it's a power conference.
Lunardi's got 14 in his latest bracketology from the SEC.
Yeah, it was 13.
He put Arkansas
this
in
week. But that's even worse. If there's 14, that's just taking at-large bids away from deserving teams like a George Mason if they do what you just described, but maybe do not win the A-10 automatic qualifier.
By the way, you know what I just noticed? Because I'm an idiot. The A-10 tournament's at Capital One Arena.
Just talk to somebody, see if we can do the show from out there that day.
Well, I mean, that's a benefit for Mason, clearly. Because they can, I mean, not that they wouldn't go to Atlantic City or the other places, Brooklyn or wherever it's been. You know, I haven't followed the A-10 tournament. I know it's been in Atlantic City a bunch, right?
Atlantic City, I think it was in Brooklyn last year at Barclays.
Okay, so, you know, but you got a chance to get kind of a home court advantage if you can get, you know, to that title game. And obviously they would be in the, you know, the double buy, or I don't know how the A-10 tournament works. Tony Skin, doing a hell of a job, was a hell of an assistant with Kevin Willard at Seton Hall and then the first year at Maryland. Easy to root for. We'll do some Denton news next. Ben Standing at 12. Robbie Hummel will join us on the show next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. All right, Denton.
All right, so I came across this story yesterday, Kevin. The Giants are placing a limited stake on the market. It looks like it could potentially be about 10% of the team. They're looking to potentially set a record valuation amongst NFL franchises. Obviously, the current record was the team here with Dan Snyder. But depending on how much 10% potentially could go for, this could be a massive, massive number for the Giants.
Yeah, I think the Forbes most recent valuation of the Giants was like just over $7 billion, maybe like $7.2 billion or something like that. But typically when you sell a small stake, a minority stake, it's not you're not going to get the valuation that you would get on selling a majority stake. So we'll see where it comes in. I mean, obviously Snyder, when he bought out his minority shareholders, Schar, Smith, and Rothman, you know, it was at like a 2.3 $2 billion valuation. The team sold a few years later for $6 billion. That's what, by the way, some of their existing lawsuits are still about, is that they weren't provided with the proper data and numbers to determine valuation of the team for a minority stake. But yeah, I mean, the Maras, the Tishes, is it just the Mara family that owns it, or do the Tishes still have a piece of it?
I believe it's those two families that each have a piece of it.
So looking to sell 10%? Yeah, it's the Giants, man. They're going to be worth a lot of money in New York.
You are correct, by the way. Forbes listed them at $7.3 billion. That's fourth among NFL franchises.
Yeah, so I don't know that they'll sell a 10% stake for for $730 million. It might be less than that because you're not taking control of the team. It's worth $7.3 billion for a controlling stake in the team. Typically,
really, to set a record would just have to be more than, I guess, $600 million. Because then you could say, because the hard team sold for that. So as long as it's 600.
10%, $600 million means it was valued at $6 billion. But let's see where a minority share stake gets valued at. Here's the thing that is, there's just not a lot of opportunity to be even a minority shareholder in an NFL team. The biggest opportunity for people to become smaller minority shareholders in a team, other than the Packers who are publicly held, was Washington's recent purchase from Snyder, because they had to raise $6 billion and they didn't have it. The managing partner, Josh Harris, had to put together a business plan and pitch 20-plus, limiteds to come in. So, yeah. All right, what else?
Following the Super Bowl, Pennsylvania sportsbooks lost over $6.5 million with the Eagles winning the game.
Was it because of futures on the Eagles or the game itself?
It's a combination of futures and the game itself. As you can imagine, not a lot of people in the state of Pennsylvania were betting for the Chiefs.
Sure.
And because the Eagles were technically the underdog, they got positive return on their money.
Yeah, I know that sportsbooks, the biggest hurt for them was some of the long-term futures, especially going back to people, betting big money on the Eagles to win the Super Bowl in October, September, November, etc. But in terms of the game, they got pounded with the game going over the total. They desperately needed the under in the game, and that didn't happen. I think on the actual game itself, I don't know, were they kind of split? Not in Pennsylvania.
Not in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I would say across the country, maybe a little bit more split. Final thing here. This is interesting to me as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft. Travis Hunter is listed as a defensive back at the NFL Combine. There's been some questions on what he is going to be when he gets to the NFL. He has expressed interest in still doing a little bit of both, but the Combine lists him as a DB.
But haven't we kind of known that for a while, that he's going to get drafted as a corner? I mean, teams might utilize him as a wide receiver, but he's getting drafted and evaluated as a corner.
I would say that has been obvious, but it seems like there was pushback from his side to not make that a thing and wants to play both. I think he's best at corner. I think he has legit number one corner instincts. But I can understand why he would want to play both and be judged by both, as both, rather.
What's the difference? I don't know the answer to this. I mean, we know that Justin Jefferson makes $35 million a year, right? Who are the highest paid corners in the league? Is it Surtain?
I think it's Surtain at $24 million per year. I remember when Jalen Ramsey got his contract, Jalen Ramsey's $24 million and Pat Surtain is 24.
Ramsey, Surtain are both at $24 million.
Yeah, 24.1.
So we're talking about a significant difference in average annual for the elite corners and the elite receivers, man. And yet, the elite corner is much harder to find. Much harder to find.
Much harder to find.
All right. Ben Standing's going to join us next. There were a couple of things I know you had in your news that I wanted to get to. Maybe we'll do that at the end of the show. But Ben's going to jump on with us, and then Robbie Hummel will jump on with us after that. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Ah. Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.